I think what we're going to see is rapid growth in terms of the insurtechs building out, they already are, offerings of managed detection response offerings, which really is 24/7 monitoring customer service of an endpoint detection response system. So you have an EDR in place, that's great. But what about, it may not be as effective as it needs to be if you don't have managed detection response, the people behind it, monitoring it, and being able to proactively, real-time, respond to those potential vulnerabilities and fixing them on your behalf as a paid service.
Welcome to Tech Insurance Leaders, the podcast that positions you at the forefront of the digital insurance landscape. Join me, Louisa Wykes, as I interview chief claims officers, tech officers, claims directors, and other claims professionals about cutting-edge insurance products, complex claims surrounding ad tech, artificial intelligence, data security, and more. Here, you'll gain the knowledge and guidance you need to thrive in the fast-paced world of modern insurance. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get started.
Today, we welcome Chris Fauda, Senior Vice President, Professional Executive and Cyber Liability Practice Leader at Founders Professional. Chris, welcome to our show.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Glad to get the opportunity and looking forward to this. Hopefully it's something that's super useful to the listeners. So thank you.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. I am excited about this. So tell our listeners about your role and responsibility at Founders.
Yeah, sure. So I am a Senior Vice President, Practice Leader of Professional Executive Cyber Liability. The main role really is quasi in a sense of a hybrid role of production, and also risk management. So there's, a lot more, as we'll continue to discuss here in the role, there's a lot more of, what you're responsible for, at least what you're providing in terms of content, in addition to just quoting business transactionally as the wholesale broker typically does. So that risk management role is where, that kind of leads to the educator part of it.
Yeah, it seems like to me that that's the part that really adds value to what you're providing.
Right. I think it just validates you as a wholesale broker. And there's so many of us, but that differentiates you and adds the value that you just spoke of really proving, validating that you're an expert or specialist in specific disciplines within the professional liability umbrella, if you will.
Tell us briefly about some of your experience before joining Founders.
2007 was really the year that I entered kind of the PNC insurance world, if you will. Commercial is such a, huge and really an unknown. I hadn't known about it at all. That was kind of 3 years I spent as an underwriter at a top, well-known A-rated carrier in the Northeast. Just underwriting executive liability, professional liability, miscellaneous D&O lines and eventually cyber, believe it or not. So, once I got through those 3 years, I wanted to come to the wholesale side. I felt like I had a lot more to bring to the table in terms of, being face to face with agents, customers, talking about coverages. Providing that specialization, becoming more of not just a transactional broker, but a risk manager as well. So I joined the wholesale side at, a national wholesale brokerage, really based out of the Southeast, although I was in the Northeast and I spent the better part of 12 plus years there until, June 22, I joined Founders Pro.
And what drew you to Founders? What are Founders' strengths?
Yeah, it's, I think for us, what I really like, enjoy what we do is, and again, credit to our management that's done this is building out disciplines and practice groups. And, there's multiple leaders across practice groups. We have some specialists who handle just say architects and engineers, some specialists who just handle and focus on lawyers. And then you have a little bit more of the generalists, which is where I come in, and some and others where, you're doing cyber liability, miscellaneous E&O, and directors and officers. So I think really that's part of the strength is, when you're dealing with a customer, you have your choice of specialization and where you want to go as you get to know the broker and then and a team leader, but you know, tenure, experience, you know, it's across the board, average of, you know, like probably 20 plus years in the industry as a wholesale broker between, you know, numerous of us that are spread across across the country. Again, that specialization. And then, you know, I think, look, the biggest thing is comparing, analyzing coverages, understanding the risk management material that's out there and bringing it to our agent, our customer, that so that they understand that, again, validating that we know what we're doing, but also putting some meaning and some purpose behind the products that we put in front of them and recommend.
Yeah, and with the specialty lines, I do think that they do vary. It's not just all the same policy form, and each insurer has different language and different coverages, and their policies work differently. So especially in cyber with all the added on coverages. What would you say are the biggest differences between working with a cyber policy and other types of policies?
Yeah, you know, I think the focus is, as it pertains to these, you know, I look at E&O and D&O policies, and the terms and conditions aren't standard in a sense where, you know, you don't have that, you know, each form is different, right? There's intent, and that's why you're comparing the coverages, so that, you know, one could be considered broader than another. But where the similarities lie there are the names of the terms and names of the coverages, kind of industry-wide accepted, you know, names of certain coverages or insuring agreements. You know, when you get to cyber, I think the biggest challenge is it's kind of that same approach. It's some policies are broader, some policies in scope, some policies are more restrictive purposely, or, you know, whatnot, whatever, you know, the insurer's intended product is to be released, but they, different names. I think it's always been the crux of, and the confusion of cyber is, you know, I mean, cyber alone, you have interchangeable terms, dependent upon not just the carrier, but the audience and the users and how they, you know, do I have data breach coverage? Do I have cyber liability coverage? Do I have, you know, and you have to kind of, in our role, explain like, well, it depends on what you mean, you know, and a lot of those coverages are named differently, but have the same intent.
Yeah. So you have to translate.
Absolutely. A lot of it. Yeah. A lot of it is, you know, kind of making sure that you're, especially when there's contract requirements, right? Like my contract requires me to have this and this, and a lot of it will just say, you know, as we, you know, what we know as the brokers and the underwriters, obviously too, know, you know, whatever says in that contract, well, they may just be requiring third party liability that's included in this cyber policy anyway, and might not be requiring first party expense coverage. So, yeah, that's important. I think, yeah, the other thing is extortion versus ransomware. And some people, you know, a lot of the agents may think it's insured, really, agents. I think at this point we're 3+ years out of really the true, yeah, explosion of it. But understanding how those terms relate and what ransomware is and, you know, what ransom is and how extortion plays into it and how they each play different roles in a common incident. That's, you know, obviously the number one.
And I think those are some of the complexities that, you know, if there's a misunderstanding on the part of the agent and the retail broker, then they're explaining it to insureds, and that can lead to a lot of unhappiness later when an incident occurs.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why our role is, it's so important and key in terms of just the translation and, you know, understanding and can you break down, and simplify what you know so that it makes sense, to the end user, the insured.
What are some of the challenges faced by retail brokers in understanding the coverages and the difference between the product offerings?
Yeah, again, it's the names of the coverages, the intent of each. You know, you have the policy itself has really two offerings. Your third party, where, you know, a third party claim could come about and made against as a result of a breach, and, you know, how do you explain the difference between that versus, you know, a lot of the first party expense coverage. You know, a lot of that is really the expense to the named insured from that occurs from an event. And that's where, you know, the policy kicks in and either pays on behalf or reimburses. And so that's the biggest thing, I think, is understanding those two. And then in addition to that, you know, the names of the terms and the intent. I mean, when you get into cybercrime, you're talking about 4, 5, 6 different, types of cybercrime, and each are different. And you know, those coverages are named on the policy. So it's kind of making sure we're trying to get the agent and the insured to understand, how they differ. And, you know, while you may think you have cybercrime, you may not have all of the exposures that could potentially occur covered in the policy you have.
Yeah, I guess just even understanding the threat landscape of what types of crimes are out there and what does right. The policy respond to and where are the gaps?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think that there is are policies diverging, or are they starting to become more standard? Is there any move to standardization?
I don't think so. I think there's parts that are becoming more standard. You start to see different carriers, just, you know, the way they define certain coverages, you know, the way they define, you know, dependent business interruption and system failure, and, you know, the way they handle waiting periods, and, you know, the offerings are becoming a little bit more standard. But no, I don't think that's, you know, I think there's still that, the appetite out there with certain carriers. They don't want to get as broad as, or irresponsibly broad in terms of low waiting periods, or, you know, lax in terms of their requirements to get the best premium and coverage out there to the insureds that have the right cyber risk or cybersecurity controls in place. I think it's becoming a little bit more diverse in terms of, again, you're talking about, as the insure techs specifically, as their engineers and, you know, some of their research shows, or find newer threats and newer exposures that are out there. You know, they are really, I think, doing a really good job of, you know, bringing these new exposures and essentially naming coverages or building available coverage around that and building the offering into there. And then you start to see some other carriers sort of follow suit. So, yeah, I think it's the least standardized offering in the marketplace, honestly.
Let's switch and talk about the markets. Do you view the SME market as a growth area, growth opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, while every wholesale broker is of course going to say and sell themselves based on the fact they can handle large complex risks. I think, and you know, while we certainly do and can, and you know, there's no premium or exposure that we're afraid of. The SME space, the industry is the major growth. I mean, any data that you look up, or any one of the leading kind of, you know, whether it's articles or whatever you may read, they're coming out with, you know, the SMEs are always, to me, the leader in terms of frequency. Lot of under or uninsured SMEs, and on the cybersecurity side, a lot of less sophisticated controls. There could be none, or there could be some, or there, you know, so that's a huge, huge growth area. And it has been for the past 2-3 years, and it's going to continue, with, you know, just trying to get, I think, from the broker's perspective, the underwriter's perspective, the cybersecurity engineer side perspective, getting them to become more sophisticated risks or sophisticated and insureds with the right controls in place. So, you know, and moving beyond just having MFA. I think that's, you know, that's kind of where a lot of the growth is going to lie.
It's kind of why do you rob the banks? That's where the money is.
Right.
And yeah. they don't have the controls in place, so they're easier targets. They may not have as deep of a pocket, but, you know, it's a volume game for the threat actors.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they don't have, again, it's always going to be the controls. You look at, you know, the smaller the insured, or the lower the revenues that they're bringing in, you know, or if you go on the nonprofit side, or, you know, municipalities, public entities, they don't always have a lot of that cost built into their budget. They're always going to point to the smaller insurers with, you know, the not as robust cybersecurity controls, but not always the case, but is definitely, again, that's a growth area on the cybersecurity side and of course a growth area on just the broker insured transactional side, whereas you're trying everything you can, and with a lot of the requirements that have come through of getting them the right insured, the right controls to be prepared. So yeah, it's really, you know, making trying to get them properly insured for the exposures they have, but being careful with regards from an underwriting perspective to, you know, limit your liability based on lack of controls. Whereas, you know, you have some more sophisticated insurers that may just be investing in the stronger security controls, and you know, they're going to get the best terms, conditions, and premiums in the market, at least that are available in the market.
I do think that cyber insurance has helped, especially in small businesses, get those controls in place, because the vendor management requirements of clients have required them to have many people to have cyber insurance that they might not ordinarily go out and purchase on their own. And then to get that insurance, they have to up their game on security. So it has helped people probably make that investment in the controls that they wouldn't normally have made.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they don't, the requirements, the insurance industry as a whole helped push those requirements more, in addition to, you know, the government and some other by state, you know, cybersecurity type requirements, depending upon the nature of operations, type of niche that you're in. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's definitely something that, you know, as we get further along here, you're going to start to see a lot more standardization of requirements. But also, I think the insureds, you know, I think the vast number of SMEs that are out there, they're becoming, you know, more standardized in their controls anyway. MFA, for instance. I mean, as time passes, it makes sense, right? You see less and less. You know, it used to be 5 out of 5 without MFA under $35 million in revenues. You may only see one now. So that's progress. But there is another. There's definitely another step that's coming in terms of making or requiring insurers to become a little bit more sophisticated now that they've taken the first step of MFA.
How do you help agents find the right product for the right customer? What are some of the things you can do?
It's an interesting, good question. I mean, it's tough to kind of address. I mean, these policies aren't really standardized, but, you know, a lot of them, for the most part, they aren't as a la carte as they used to be. I mean, you used to be able to kind of across the board, you know, get your third party coverage and then add on some first party or play with supplements here and there. And so I think it's underwritten to controls. And so if you have an insurer that has, segregated backups, MFA in place across the board, all over their email, remote access. And then go one further, they have like an endpoint detection response system or something, those, the right policy for that sophisticated, or at least for those controls that are in place, they're going to get, broader coverage. You know, there's not going to be any limitations on coverage. You're going to get your full limit. Let's say if you have $1 million limit, you're going to get mostly across the board, except for cyber crime. And then whereas the ones that don't have the right controls, they may miss a few, parts of required, you know, MFA, they could have the network, the overall external access to the network locked down and the MFA is in place, but not company email or, you know, web access to email or remote or, privileged user access, something like that. That's where, unfortunately the right policy, it's not the right policy, but the offering they're going to get is probably a supplement for ransomware and dependent BI and about business interruption and system failure and extortion. So, you'll see that as well. But I think the right policy across the board for all of them is, regardless of the size of the insured, is, you're looking for, it's a no brainer, your full limit. And then as the larger risks, as you get up there in revenues and depending upon exposures or type of, business operations, that's where you start to recommend higher limits based on benchmarking and Then you get beyond that, and you start to talk about or look at, you know, other cases that are similar and what the cost would be based on, you know, record count, dependent upon how, what kind of exposures they have that are obviously going to be larger in scale and frequency than, say, your SME. So.
Yeah, with a large risk and having a risk officer and having cybersecurity sophistication, you would assume it seems like they are more of a able to respond to any deficiencies in the application, so they can negotiate that with putting into additional controls if needed.
Yeah, not all carriers even require. Still, you know, some may have found at this point that, you know, while they may not require MFA for a certain size risk, usually the smaller ones, believe it or not, and will still give those terms, and that's directly correlated to their loss experience. You know, they may just be seeing that and being, you know, their actuaries are seeing, or their risk engineers are seeing, you know, we aren't really seeing as much activity on smaller risks under a certain revenue threshold, don't have MFA when we thought we would. So, you know, let's not require it and spend more time on requiring those controls being in place for some of the other classes of business, or, you know, where we are seeing a lot more of the activity.
How can the information flow be simplified? Is there a way to simplify and make it easier for people to compare and understand the different products?
Yeah, I wish that I could point out to, say, you know, one vendor or website of the popular ones or the well-known ones in our industry, at least on the cyber side, whether you're a broker, an insurance company, or, you know, or a retail agent, but there isn't. There's, I think it's up to us, I think, really, as brokers, to kind of act as intermediaries like we always do, but funnel that information. And I think that's what really would simplify it, is, you know, we do it all the time. You get, you have your go-tos, you have your vendors or your, risk management websites that you go to that seem to be very, well received and respected in the industry. And you take that content, funnel it to your desk and then kind of, you know, try to make it your own and put out a solid risk management piece or article that's a 5-minute read via email, to your agency base, and that supports, I think, validates your expertise. So it's really more of us, the specialists, kind of, you know, and the ones that are interested or, you know, really focused in, you know, that discipline to bring it, to funnel it in and try to, quote unquote, standardize it at our desk, if that makes sense, and bring it into the agents that they have a source. So it's really just us as being their source and leading it, you know, all the research to us to simplify it.
Yeah, I think understanding that there's a difference and understanding the impact of that difference are two different things.
Right.
So yep. Explaining why it matters seems to be a role that you guys can play. Do you also help with cybersecurity aspects?
Yeah, I mean, we obviously aren't, you know, we're not selling, at least at Founders Pro, we're not selling that. We have counterparts and others that do that within the company, but we don't. You know, we're not focused on that in terms of the end sale.
Right.
Obviously recommending, as we're placing more and more policies and interacting more with our insurtechs, and other just general, you know, the other cyber carriers, we're, becoming more aware and learned of those products and, you know, really on the security side and understanding EDR, MDR, you know, and a lot of the different controls. And so with our underwriter partners, especially the insurtechs that, you know, yep. Each carrier has their own preferred, type of, first of all, they each kind of, they could define, best in class controls differently based on their loss experience, or at least their risk profile. But also they have, you know, certainly insurtechs specifically have products that, you know, that they recommend. So we really, again, we are facilitating service. Meaning, you know, we're getting, in addition to a recommended option, we're getting, them to understand, some of not necessarily the intent of the, you know, we can't really consult on the side. We're not in that, We don't focus on cybersecurity, so we're not really experts in, hey, you should use, you know, this tool versus this tool, or this vendor has worked better than this vendor. But we leverage our carrier partners to help us with that. But we're definitely innovating in terms of innovating in a sense where we're bringing those products, the awareness to the insured, the agent and the insured more. You know, you can't just, I think it's very rare. Like, for instance, I won't necessarily tell an agent, like, you got to use, I try to avoid it, is just install EDR. It's kind of going one step further now and saying, hey, this carrier typically likes this, or, you know, go, you know, this is what's really going to be most useful, to get you the change in terms that you want. So that's really just really, it's general consulting, you know, innovating in terms of bringing the product, the awareness of the product.
Yeah. Or just, again, explaining the impact. If you have these controls, then you can do these things.
Right.
If you don't have these controls, then you need to go this other way.
Yeah. And I think if you're contract as a wholesale broker, if you're working with an insurtech, you don't really have a choice, because some of these insurtechs have added security features in their policy that is kind of that's something that, you know, you're going to have to explain to an agent and let them know, well, there's this extra fee on the policy now because this carrier is providing these services, you know, active monitoring, that kind of service, that's an added sell and feature versus a standard cyber policy. That's, you know, just.
I think that's such an interesting development. The insurtechs now, that distinction between the cybersecurity vendors and the insurer is just getting blurred more and more. And the policies coming with the cybersecurity aspects. So you're buying you're not just buying the policy, you're buying some controls as well.
Yeah.
And it makes total sense, because then they're confident that the controls are in place and are being implemented properly.
Right.
But I can see how that could be confusing to somebody purchasing. Why aren't they asking for this question? Well, because it's already built into the policy.
Yeah, it's really where the term InsurSec is becoming, you know, more and more popular, and you're going to start to see that. They kind of have, look, we have partners that one specifically that will, you know, with your policy, offer and include just a download of their software, which is going to solve the EDR segregated backup issue and MFA issue with your policy. And that's a great offering for the right insurer if they need that. Whereas if they already have some of that in place, then there's another product. And then there's others that some of the insure techs that are just kind of, you know, putting in, always doing the active monitoring, but have heavily discounted rates partners with a lot of these vendors. As you get closer to the InsurSec, you're going to see they're actually creating their own cybersecurity products and services, and it's an additional revenue stream that will be for them.
Yeah, no, it's very innovative. What are some of the benefits of the insurer providing active monitoring and other services versus having a third party provide them?
I think it's the obvious one is it's all in-house. It's, you know, you're the benefit of kind of, you know, it's kind of similar from an insurance perspective to keeping some of the lines of coverage similar, where the claims can be, equal or overlap with the same carrier, so that you don't have this confusion between claims adjusters at different carriers. But for the most part, I think it's keeping it in-house. You may have if your coverage is with a carrier that doesn't necessarily have a partnership or a familiarity with the engineering team at the carrier doesn't have a familiarity or a relationship or partnership with, the cybersecurity vendor you're using for certain tools, whether it's EDR and whatever it is, then you may have a little bit of a lag there in terms of, first of all, agreeing on what should be solved or implemented. When you have it with, again, as the InsurSec term, and a lot of these insurtechs and other carriers bolster their offering, you're going to start to get the adjuster. I'm trying to think of the different roles in each carrier, but the adjuster, the engineers, the cybersecurity folks that are working on that specific, that it's all commonly known. Whether you're using a recommended vendor of the carrier that they're, you know, it doesn't necessarily need to be in-house. It could be a recommended vendor that they are familiar with and are always working with, or if it's theirs that they've recently created, or, you know, then it's, so it's really just, you know, I think it's speed of service back to the customer. I think it's, and then, you know, let's not forget it's the one-stop shop, angle, right? I mean, when you're, you know, how much more as a carrier can you provide to your end user, to keep them as a customer for as long as possible?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're building in, if their system is secured by the insurer, they're less likely to change policies based on differences in premium.
Of course.
So that makes sense to me. It's a retention. Of course, if they get non-renewed, then that's a real problem for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, but again, there's not just going to want to be one carrier. I mean, there's already, you know, going to be probably three to five, you know, and there'll be more and more that'll be doing it.
How do you keep up with the volume of information and the pace of innovation?
You know, I mean, you know, look, the easy answer is you got to love what you do. You have to have a passion for it. And you have to be interested. And from that become, you know, once you have that, and that comes it either comes naturally or it's something that comes over time. The more and more, it's like anything else. You specialize in something because it starts with you're seeing a lot of it and you start to become more comfortable and then you develop a passion for it. So it's becoming a student of the industry. You know, you have to, you know, you could put more hours in and you know, use those hours to be reading and to be understanding and really, I mean, the internet, the web is huge with regards to information out there, right? So you're finding the info and you're looking at these different articles and you're trying to analyze. But you got to pay attention. You have to pay attention to the content that's in front of you, whether it's on the risk management side or underwriting side and exposure side from the carriers. I mean, that's the news I read. I mean, I'm reading from our carrier partners, what's going on, what they're offering, what they're not offering, what the new exposures are, what to look out for. And I'm reading the articles, from the cybersecurity folks that are putting out a lot of that content. And so it's taking that, and just staying current with it. And I think it even helps me learn and solidify kind of the knowledge and the specialization more as I bring it and put it into, you know, one single email, 5-minute read, templates that I can send out to my agents to help them, understand it too. So, you know, it's really just you just have to be a student and the thirst for knowledge.
I think that the second part of that is the best, is the 5-minute read that pulls it together and delivers it, because the volume out there there's so much volume out there, and there's so many, you know, pieces on LinkedIn that are just, you know, this happened, without the why it matters. And so that pulling things together and packaging it and simplifying it and delivering it is such a value for people.
And you don't want to just throw content at people. You want to find out what you feel is impactful to you. Because you got 5 minutes. I mean, 5-minute read, you know how it is, right? When, you know, we're all getting a ton of emails every single day. So we got to make sure, you know, for me, from a sales point, how do I get what I'm sending to either not be avoided, unsubscribed, deleted, ignored, right? So I got to find out what's most impactful that I'm taking out of it, but also knowing my customer base and knowing what's going to be impactful to them and delivering it to them. And that is, I think, that's how you build your reputation, your specialization, and ultimately your book of business.
And how you provide people value, right? You become a valued source for them because they know that you are not bombarding them with, you know, here's exactly five things that happened, you know,
exactly.
Here's the 5-minute read of what you should know and why you need to know it.
Right. And once you establish yourself as the expert, you gain trust from your customer base, and they're going to go to the expert that they trust. You know, I don't know this, this is an opportunity. I know I want to write it and I want to earn the business. I'm going to send it to the expert that I know that I trust is going to get me the information that I need back to be able to either help the sale or the proposal to win the deal.
Are there things that the insurers can do that would assist you in placing their policies?
If this were 3+5 years ago, pre-insurtech, I would probably say they need to teach us how to sell it. They need to provide us with the information and the risk management examples and the benchmarking and limit benchmarking, claims examples, which have always been around, but more data, like building out templates or calculators, if you will, to business interruption, what it's going to cost, showing an insured real cost based on the data that they've given you, the revenues and stuff like that. That's impactful. That's obviously out there. What else could they do? I think, as I look at it, where we're at right now, you're going to start to see a lot of this carrier offered managed detection response services and product. Yeah. They're going to definitely need to help us more. A lot of it's published, but helping us more through conversations and calls, not just talking about their appetite and their, let's talk about your MDR offering and how are we supposed to be having those conversations with our agents and them, their insureds, so that they know your MDR product and can discuss the benefits with, their IT folks and their IT leaders. So a lot more of just being, making it readily available. And they're doing an incredible job, of course, right? I mean, you can go anywhere now and find the information, whereas before it was a little bit tougher. Everything's at our fingertips. And I think, look, that's why you have a lot. That's also why cyber insurance, it's not just the requirements and the awareness of the exposure that the insured now has because of the news and the bigger businesses being hacked and more popular ones, but it's the information that's out there. As a broker, it's made me a risk manager. Once the I can listen to the podcast a ton. There's been a lot of differing opinions, even when you talk to the non-cyber scan carriers about how they feel about it versus the insurtechs. But to me, if the cyber scan did anything, I think we can, as a wholesale broker, I think we can all agree as wholesale brokers that it turned us into risk managers. We now had a tangible product via PDF format or link that we could send to an agent and say, hey, show this to your client's IT. It may help you really impose that need for coverage based on terms that, we don't know what they mean, but it's, yeah. It's scary to see, you have this many things wrong. And this URL is potentially, understanding and defining those terms and explaining it to them. It's just an easier handoff, but yeah, that's what's the most important. But yeah, ultimately it's continuing to do what they're doing, but not losing sight that the educational material has to be out there for these new product offerings. Some carriers do it well in terms of putting it out there and making you aware of it.
Yeah, because if you're, if you're getting questions back from the agents of what is this and you can't explain it to them, then they're going to lose confidence in you, right? So
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You got to have a deliverable's fine. It's just because you put a PDF in front of somebody that explains it well doesn't mean you don't know it. It just add an opinion to it. This is what I see and what I think makes sense, or that we're getting really good feedback on this specific service so far.
I think that is one of the benefits when you can go to someone who can give you information. If you're a purchaser, if you can go to someone who can give you that real time information about other people's experience, that's reassuring, So is this something I should have? Well, other people have found it really valuable,
Yeah. Yeah. Or it's not necessary. But this is complicated stuff. For anyone outside of the cybersecurity industry. How do you find a way to add some value to the content that's already out there and represent, or you can just be a facilitator and connect the two. It's a huge gap too, right? I'm sure they're doing it on their own, the carrier side, but we're part of the sales process with our agent, so that I think we have a responsibility as well to bring the cybersecurity side of the industry and the end user insured together as well.
Well, when someone's trying to sell you something too, you know, so if an insurer is trying to sell me something as a small business owner, I sometimes want that person that's on my side of the transaction of, you know, they say it's really scary and yeah. I need this, you know, like how is, you know, I sometimes you want that third, that person who's on you, sort of your side of the transaction to say, yeah, they're right. It is scary. You should get that. Or, you know, people who have gotten it have had a good experience and, you know, it's good. Or, you know, we've sold a lot of them. Nobody seems to use it. So, you know, it's really up to your preference.
It's almost as a buyer, you want to define a reason why you're buying it. You're not just going to buy it because you've heard it's needed. It's more or less, show me the stats, show me the proof, show me the cost, and show me the benchmarking. Show me the benchmark. Benchmarking meaning, you know, what are businesses like my business seeing in terms of the claims cost versus, you know, obviously you get into premiums and benchmarking limits and stuff to be insurable. The right type, you know, the insured, properly insured in terms of limit versus exposure. But show me why, you know, why should I be buying this? And now you're at a point where I don't want to say it's an easy sell, but it's pretty close because you have all the data to be able to prove to the insured of what it can cost based on what you have. If you have X amount of records, you're probably going to look at this as what it's going to cost to notify people. Or here's the average ransom demand right now for a business of your size. And then in addition to that, you have all this other cybersecurity, you know, these products that are out there that you can say, hey, we can probably knock all of that out with one transaction. If you buy this policy, it's coming with these tools that are a simple download. You know, don't be afraid of the data. You know, that's the next thing, right? You have some hesitancy of, well, what am I downloading? But, you know, these carriers, these insurtechs are not offering this stuff without the proper team. The customer success teams behind that offering to be able to consult the insured on just making it seamless.
And I think that anytime you're dealing with one company, you do avoid gaps. Or if there are gaps, you have somebody you can point to. it's on them, not you.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so we're coming up on the hour. So let's wrap up. What is something you or your team have recently achieved that you're really proud of?
Yeah, you know, it's an ongoing, there's nothing specific, but it's an ongoing, I think, feat and intent and purpose of what we are doing. I mean, we want to educate, we want to manage risk and help others manage risk. And by doing that, it's consolidating content and bringing it to our agents. And we do that through, you know, email marketing, you know, having combined calls with our carrier partners from a risk management perspective to educate them on need and you know, that kind of stuff, whether it's EPLI or cyber or E&O, you know, it's making them understand and have actual, not just understanding for themselves, but helping them sell the need to their customers. And so that's something I think that if you talk to, I definitely am. And I think if you talk to anybody, a founder's professional, they're going to be proud of, because, you know, I think we've identified ourselves as a risk manager and, you know, our competitors are doing the same. So it's imperative that we do the same and we're doing it. You know, I think we want to be looked at as specialists and experts and trusted advisors from a risk management perspective. And so that was what we're doing, have done, and we're going to continue to do.
I never thought of a wholesale broker in that role. And I think it's, you know, it's really been enlightening for me to see that that is such a big part of what wholesale brokers do, that education and risk management role.
It's the number one.
Yeah. And I, you know, it just never occurred to me. I'm on the claim side. So I see sort of. Right. When I you know, working with brokers is really helpful in the claim side because they can help. They do have that relationship with the insureds and with the retail brokers, and the, you know, help keep you, you know, help you have that line of communication. But on the purchase side, I hadn't fully appreciated all the educational and risk management that goes into that.
You know, whereas the agent typically represents heavily the insured and their interests, wholesale broker is an intermediary. So you're representing the underwriter's interests and you're representing the retail agent broker's interests. But, you know, no matter if you're a retail broker or a wholesale broker, the difference between those two terms is just the point of the transaction and where you play your role. You're an educator and a risk manager. Retail agents have traditionally, historically been the true risk managers for their insureds. We play that role as well with the products that we offer, especially if we're specializing in them. So, you know, you have to add a lot of that risk management content to really show that that intent, or I'm sorry, show that the reason for why they should buy it and the purpose for why they should buy it. Because you can't, you know, again, that's effectively selling something with a purpose. So I think it's got to be insightful. It's got to be concise. You got to be cognizant of others' time. And we got a lot of good feedback from our agents partners. For the most part, you know, I'm just traveling, being on the road and visiting some of my agents, you'll get the, hey, really appreciate, you know, what you put out there. And I'm like, hey, that's good to hear, because, you know, it helps us kind of continue to know and get that feedback and put it and continue to put it out there. Because if we're not getting that feedback, you know, we don't want to just throw content at people. That's not being, no one does.
You know, again, there's so much bad content out there. So if you're able to get it and that people find it useful, that's rewarding.
Absolutely.
What do you recommend to anyone who wants to have a successful career in the tech insurance industry?
You know, I think I go back to my point on just truly being a student of the industry. You have to, you know, you have to understand what you're putting out there. You have to take interest in it. The more you see it and read about it, it'll pick your interest. You know, you have to, when you commit yourself to putting in the hours to understand, and read about it, and you have that interest, you build a specialization and an expertise. You have to know, you have to have the knowledge of it. So being a student of it is important. If you're going to just transactionally broker business, but not, you know, really read about, the risk management side or understand the product you're selling, you're going to find yourself in a situation where you're looked at by your customers as having that specialization and that need and being able to answer questions, whether it's hopping on a call with an insurer or whatnot, you know, whatever it may be. And, you know, if you're not prepared, it's going to be directly correlated to how much research you did.
I can see the importance of building trust in the role that you have. And if you aren't a trusted intermediary, you know, it's not going to end well.
Absolutely.
Any predictions for 2024?
You know, I think it wouldn't be a prediction to say, you know, ransomware is going to continue to lead or business email compromise is still going to become an issue. I think for this, it's important to focus on this idea of insurtechs becoming insurecs. There's going to be twofold here. I think what we're going to see is rapid growth in terms of the insurtechs building out they already are offerings of managed detection response offerings, which really is 24/7 monitoring customer service of an endpoint detection response system. So you have an EDR in place, that's great, but what about it may not be as effective as it needs to be if you don't have managed detection response, the people behind it monitoring it and being able to proactively real-time active respond to those potential vulnerabilities and fixing them on your behalf as a paid service. So that's going to start to continue to, you're going to see a lot. I think we're going to see a lot more rapid growth in the 24 and beyond on those offerings. And then one step further, I think that's the next probably required control in place is you can have EDR, but you know, some carriers may go as far as saying you have to use our MDR and a managed detection response product in order to place policy with us or to get the best terms and conditions. You know, it's kind of the old, all right, a few years ago it was, if you have an MFA in place, you're going to get the best terms and conditions. If you don't, you may not get a quote at all, or you're probably going to get some restrictive provisions in your policy. So, you know, if now it's really going to get to that point where you're going to see more and more of these carriers offering it and also then requiring it.
Oh, I think it's a good thing. You know, I mean,
of course,
I love these developments and this innovation, and I agree with you. I love also, you're the first person, and maybe I just haven't been studying enough, to use that InsurSec, instead of InsurTech. I like that.
Yeah, it's out there. The big three, original InsurTechs are doing it. You know, I know they're definitely at least offering, a light version of it, kind of like a fee embedded in their policy and doing the active monitoring on the background. Whereas once you get into that next step, I know two of the three are doing it, and there's more outside of those that are doing it with the MDR, true MDR offering. Then you get insured client specific services. So it's not more of a general scan of the book and allowing these insureds to know about them, but you know, it's an added purchase. So it's got to be more personalized.
Great. Thank you for coming on. It's been very educational for me, and I can see there's always something new to learn. And so I appreciate your sharing your insights with us.
Absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, it's something I've been looking forward to, excited to get on here. The platform is great. And, you know, just making hopefully it's useful. And, you know, there's content here that your listeners can take from and enjoy.
Excellent. Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
And that concludes this episode of the Tech Insurance Leaders Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's discussion. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode. Join us next time as we continue to bring you the latest industry trends, expert insights, and strategies to navigate the ever-evolving world of insurance. Thank you for listening, and until next time.